You're listening to Press Play OK, a deep dive into your favorite Oklahoma artists. Today we talked with Brianna Wright, a singer, songwriter, and vital catalyst in the Tulsa music scene. You may know her from her longtime band Nightingale, a four-piece outfit providing honest, soul-drenched Americana straight from the heartland. You may also know her from her most recent endeavor as a co-singer for the band Cliff Diver, an emo pop outfit also based in Tulsa. She's performed in every landmark venue in the city and sang in front of crowds of thousands, and she isn't stopping anytime soon. Learn more about Brianna's journey as an artist and a versatile singer in the latest Press Play OK.
You've been away for a long time. I've been holding it down.
Support for this podcast comes from Musicians Haven, a nonprofit organization focused on providing opportunities for musical enjoyment. Based out of Claremore, Musicians Haven provides events like jam nights, vinyl nights, and intimate concerts. More information on Musicians Haven at musichaven.org or at facebook.com/musicianshaveninc.
Oh, let me show you how good it can.
Everybody, this is Maria, and I'm with Brianna Wright of Nightingale and recently Cliff Diver.
Hello. Happy to be here, Maria.
So I guess this is something I always find interesting, is the kind of music that people grew up with. Like, what was played around the house when you were growing up?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so me and my mom used to listen to Delilah. Mm-hmm. We would go on road trips. We'd listen to her. And so that music that she played, that, like, chicken soup for the soul stuff, like a lot of 70s soft rock and, you know, like singer-songwriter stuff, and that was like one of my first big experiences with the way that music can kind of create these experiences. And I always really loved soundtracks too when I was little. We listened to the Bodyguard soundtrack a lot on repeat. I knew every word when I was like 5, and that was like the fun thing I did when family came over was, oh, do the Bodyguard soundtrack. So there was a lot of that. My dad listened to a lot of like soul and funk, listened to George Clinton and Phil Perry on the way to school. And so there was, my parents just love music. So I was exposed to everything. But once I was old enough to sort of seek out my own identity or, you know, tastes, I was very into DIY, first wave, second wave emo, and like post-hardcore and stuff like that was what I loved. When I was 10, we moved to Branson, Missouri. And there's a lot to do there, but not for a 10-year-old, you know, from a suburban setting. And so my sister, who was 16 at the time, she didn't have any friends. We were new there. So she took her 10-year-old sister, thankfully, to every concert she could. We'd have to drive at least 30 minutes to find them. But I got to see some incredible concerts. I started going to shows when I was 10. So it's been incredible to look back and say, oh, I saw them when, and, ooh, you know, kind of have gotten an early start with some stuff. So that was kind of what I fell into when I got old enough to listen to my own music, you know, like Clarity by Jimmy Eat World. That was like a moment for me, you know, and all of that. It just been the floodgates.
What were some of those highlights of those concerts?
Oh my gosh, man. I remember one of the big things for me at the moment, and still, it's like still a cool thing, but I got to see Chris Carrabba from Dashboard Confessional whenever he was the lead singer for Further Seems Forever. And I used to love Further Seems Forever. They were playing with oh my gosh, I think they were playing with like 238 or Project 86, and it was incredible. And that's one thing that was kind of cool. A lot of the shows in that area were like Christian rock shows and stuff. So a lot of it came from that kind of a very specific slice of that genre as well.
Yeah, I definitely have, like, from like a pivotal moment, you know, teenage years, the concerts during that time.
for some reason, looking back, it's like, wow, that really changed my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way the business is evolving and the way music and the way that we interact with music and musicians. And I mean, obviously now post 2020, we don't even know where we're headed now, but you know, things have changed so much, and it makes me feel so old to get nostalgic like that. But every year feels like 10 years now, where and everything feels so much further away. When, you know, you used to go to Pink Eye and, you know, walk to Quick Trip to use the bathroom because the bathrooms at Pink Eye were so bad, and then wait for your mom to come get you. You know, like, it seems so far away, but like, it's forever in my heart.
Oh, yeah. I guess I wanted to kind of ask about some of your inspirations, at least from a vocal standpoint. Mm-hmm. Who are some like vocalists that you look to?
So like growing up, it was Whitney Houston, it was Mariah Carey, it was these massive powerhouses that could just, I mean, there was no debate ever. No one has ever debated about Whitney Houston. No one's ever had a conversation about Mariah Carey and what she can do. So when I was little, I gravitated to that so much, to that power and that consistency and that the effect that they had on people and the effect that they had on me when I would listen to it. It was just so flawless. And that's kind of continued as I've grown up. I really, and it's kind of funny because obviously being in a more DIY space, like, I didn't take a lot of inspiration from those singers, but I enjoyed people who didn't sound anything like me. You know, people who are maybe a little bit more monotone or have like a pitch problem, but it works, you know, things like that, where it's the complete contrast. And I've always enjoyed that, but like inspiration, like that's where I'd want to be. I mean, lately especially, it's been like Yeba is this singer who just has the most insane voice I've ever heard. And that's like when I'm at home and I need to feel inspired and pushed, like, she's one singer that I listen to. And then songwriter, I just discovered Amber Mack, and I can't stop listening to her. She has this amazing voice, but she's an incredible songwriter. And as my career evolves, I've learned to appreciate different things about other artists. And so I think the inspiration kind of changes, but the feeling doesn't, that you know, getting outside of yourself and either listening to something that's so different than you that feels good, you know, or listening to something that you want to be and kind of having that relationship with it.
Yeah.
It's great.
I heard you mention songwriting for a second there. So when did you first start songwriting?
So I've always liked writing songs, and since I was a teenager, I was, I think 12, and my mom bought me a little piano, and I was having a massive Dolly Parton phase when I was 10. I had all her cassettes at the time, and I would listen to them over and over again, and she, just incredible songwriter. And so I would sit down at my little piano and I would try to write Dolly songs. And I would get so discouraged because mine weren't as good as hers. This is how I was when I was a kid. Like, it wasn't professional, so I hated it. And I've always had a level of that kind of drive to want to write, but it hasn't really been until with Cliff Diver that I've actually been able to spend a lot of time in that space as a songwriter. So I would say just recently I've kind of blossomed into putting those things down and actually creating music in a whole way, like from start to finish.
Yeah. So what's that process been like? Is it kind of a learning curve?
Big learning curve.
Yeah.
The guys, the poor guys in Cliff Diver, when they brought me in, they were very clear that they wanted my point of view and that I was there to tell the story with them and not just to be singing with the band. poor guys, they had to sit around with me while I gave disclaimers. I'd be like, okay, I wrote something, but it's really bad. And I know you guys are just like, don't kick me out of the band when I bring this up. And they would over and over and over again have to be like, Brianna, you have to relax. Like, you have to trust us. You're going to come up with bad ideas, and we're okay with that. Can you be okay with that? You know, because I'd never been through the whole process before, much less with other people. So getting to kind of create a safe environment where those things can come out and we can bounce things around and then polish it up. And it's really, really great. And it's been great for me to learn how to do that in such a collaborative environment and like a safe environment.
So I also wanted to ask, your collaboration with Cliff Diver, how did that start?
So me and Joey have been friends for a little while. And he actually, Nightingale, he hosted our EP release with Evan Hughes, the unofficial mayor of Tulsa. And after that, we had kind of been talking leading up to the EP release, and they were working on a single, and he was like, hey, do you want to come lay something down? I know you're into this music. And I said, oh, absolutely, like in a heartbeat. And this was towards the beginning of the pandemic, so we're all like spread out in this guy's home studio, you know, taking turns in and out of the booth. And we had such a fun time working together. I understood every reference. There was a great dialogue about what we were doing that day and kind of what we wanted out of it. And we had so much fun recording and figuring things out that when the song was finished, and this is a story they tell me, is that they were listening to it, and I don't remember I think this part changes when they tell me the story, but one of them said, we could never play this live without her, like, maybe we should just get her in the band. And Joey had been making jokes up to that point, but they formally sat me down and they were like, so we had an idea. It's kind of crazy. What do you think? And again, we were in the middle of a pandemic. I'm a mom. I'm like officially in my 30s. I'm not saying no to anything right now. Like, I'm not in a phase of life where I'm leaving things on the table. So it was like a yes, absolutely. Let's do it. And we wrote an album. And yes. It's awesome.
I didn't see it coming, but it makes perfect sense now that it's happened.
Yeah. And that's kind of the funny thing, too, is because they were pretty established before I came around. You know, they didn't need me. And so, like, getting to come into it, I know that it's an elephant in the room, and people are kind of like, what is this going to sound like? People who listen to me in other capacities are wondering, what is this going to sound like? And I am just so excited to release it, because it is... it's unlike anything I've heard before, but it's still like familiar and very of the moment, you know, but nostalgic and everything that I love about, you know, pop punk, emo, like it's really good.
So another thing I want to ask about is, what is it like being in two such different sounding bands?
It's, to be honest, it just feels kind of natural. I love what I do with Nightingale, and I've been doing it for a while, and I get to sing in the way that I always have, but I get to make the music I've always listened to with Cliff Diver. So it's these two things that are so fulfilling together. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's very balanced, and the bands are also different. What we do is different, and how we perform is different, how we interact is different. And so it has been to me almost like comforting and healing in a way to get to expand like that and to not feel so bottled up, and it makes me hungrier.
Yeah. Do you think there's ever like maybe another genre you're thinking about tackling someday?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I'm working on a solo project because I apparently just can't stop. And I Like, that is going to be a big exploration and answer to that question. And there's going to be a lot of elements to that. We're sort of in the pre-production of that, and I'm still writing. It's going to touch a lot of different genres that I love and sounds that I love. You know, the word genre, it's a dirty word to me, but like these sounds that I love, these elements that I love that take you somewhere. And I'm excited about experimenting with that. So yeah, there'll be a lot more.
So you're in the very like beginning.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm hoping to get in the studio by fall. This will be my first actual solo project. I did a Christmas CD, but like years ago, but this will be my first, you know, solo project. And I really want to take my time with it, but I'm also very anxious to start seeing what it sounds like. Like, I can't wait to listen to it, what's in my head, and to get it out there.
I'm excited to listen to it, too.
I think it'll be pretty good.
I mean, I'm feeling the hype on this one.
Check in with me in a few months.
Yeah. Well, another thing I wanted to ask about is just the Tulsa music scene. What was it like coming up in the Tulsa music scene?
Especially like starting out as just like an audience member. I was a fan. I bought tickets, you know, for so long. I didn't even start really, you know, performing till my like mid-20s, early 20s. And so it's been a funny relationship because there's people who I snuck into their shows when I was in high school and right out of high school that I'm like playing bills with and stuff. You know, like I was definitely not 21, and I would go to Brandje's shows because she's just electric on stage, and I would just like sit in the back corner so nobody would try to card me and drink my water and tip real bit good, you know, so that they don't kick me out, so that I could watch it. Chow, we used to have this jazz club on Brookside called Chow, and they had this red room, and I'd go in there and I'd listen to like Mike Cameron and Rebecca Ungerman and all these amazing jazz legends. So I had this huge love affair with Tulsa. Like, our jazz history is just insane. And then even to like Jacob Fred Jazz Odyssey. And now I've gotten to work with Chris Combs, and he's doing Combsy, which is just incredible. So I'm still just such a fan of Tulsa music. And so I think coming up in that as a fan has made me just so much more grateful, but also I think mindful in a way of like our shows. And it's just very, very humbling. Like, it's all encompassing for me because I'm still a fan. Even if I'm on stage, I'm still, you know, I feel that way, you know, like I feel like I'm taking it in as everyone else is. And performing is definitely my favorite thing to do. So
yeah, that's really interesting, coming up first as an audience member, and then next thing you know, you're the one on the stage playing bills with these people. That's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it blows my mind. I feel like such a dork sometimes because like I'll be like, the first time I played Canes, I like had to go in the bathroom and just like sob for a little while. You know, like I was born in Tulsa. Canes is like swinging for the friggin' fences. Like that's a dream. It's crazy. And like I played Canes like two or three times last year. And it, like, that's bizarre to me. I don't think I've ever taken anything for granted as far as like that, I guess you could call it that come up, or like, because I've worked very hard, but there's also just an element of like, of luck and people liking you and supporting you. And that to me is like just so, so humbling. And I stay grateful because of that.
Oh, let me show you how good it can.
I guess, you know, focusing on this idea of like milestones, what was a big like milestone show for you?
So definitely the first time we played Canes a few years back for this Roots Festival. It was actually it was an accident that we played Canes. It was supposed to be at Guthrie Green, and it was raining and there was a bad weather forecast. And so like, I think it was that morning we got the text that it was like, okay, the show got moved to Canes. And that was a huge, like a massive moment for me. I would say getting to play Mercury Lounge, like just as a Tulsa kid, you know, it's just those little things, like getting to play that for the first time. even just like we opened for the Wailers at Cane's the first time we played there. That was massive. That's huge. And so I think getting to play those places for me in my head, and on top of, you know, working with these people that I've always looked up to, is achieving those goals too, of being where I want to be. It blows my mind. It blows my mind. Like, I can play 3 times in a year and it'll blow my mind every single time. But it's incredible. I did, big milestone was getting to play, record at Leon Russell's Lake House studio.
Oh, on Grand Lake?
Yeah, yeah. It was incredible. Ooh. Oh my gosh, when we did Back to Paradise on Horton Records, and it was just like Branje, Golden Ones, I sang with Charlie Redd, Chris Combs, like Jacob Tovar, John Fulbright, everybody. And that was such a pinch me thing. I've looked at, like, opened the record and just stared at it a few times during the pandemic, just like looking at it, like, I can't believe that happened. They called me. They called me. It blows my mind every time. There's so many milestones. Like, I just, you know, you've worked for it, but it still never feels like you could work hard enough to get what's happening to you. And so it's hard to say, because I consider everything a milestone. Every time someone calls me, every time someone thinks of me for an event, that to me is just like, oh my God, it's a milestone. It is.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. I think that I don't want to ever change. Like, I don't want to not be excited about every single booking. I don't ever want to not be pumped about playing Cane's or, you know, whatever it is. Like, it keeps me going in a way. Like, that grateful, that gratitude and that kind of attitude can also keep you from burnout and keeps you present and keeps you focused on people and the music. And so I hope that never changes.
Yeah.
If I get too big for my britches, Maria, you call me and you're like, listen.
An intervention.
Put your chihuahua down. Listen to me. You've changed.
So I guess, speaking of things that just keep you going, are there any like big goals that you set for yourself for the future?
Yeah. I think my goals have become less tangible, clear-cut things, like, you know, playing Cane's, playing Mercury Lounge, playing for more than 5,000 people, things like that, because I've achieved a lot of those one-time impossible goals. And I think, especially becoming a mom, like, that has shifted my mindset and my goals for, like, my music career, because especially with Cliff Diver, in that scene, and this could be said for Nightingale as well, with, like, Americana and stuff like that, there is a massive problem with underrepresentation in DIY and in that space. Like, there always has been, or else I would have been making this music a long time ago. That's, you know, I would have sought that out because that's what I knew and that's what I came from. And I didn't, because I never thought that I would fit in. Mm-hmm. Like, people are going to make fun of me. Like, they're not going to get it. It's not going to sound right, you know? And so I just never tried it. And so now, being a mom and looking at my daughter, it's like, no, I don't want her ever thinking that about anything. So I'm going to do it so that someone else doesn't have to wonder if they can. I'm going to, so my goals have shifted to, representation is very, very important to me. Everything I'm doing, I'm trying to be an example in some way, like, whether it's bravery or, you know, just being honest about where you're at, or, you know, like, I don't try to hide my age. I don't try to hide the fact that I'm a mom. I'm not ashamed of those things, because they're a part of who I am, and that's what's going to come out of me. Like, I'm not ashamed of my mental health, like, struggles and stuff, and that's something in Cliff Diver I get to talk about, you know, that moms don't get to sit around and talk about their mental health, you know, women of color. Like, there's massive underrepresentation. So I would say that right now, that's what my biggest focus is for my music career and what I'm trying to, and I want to make some good music too.
Yeah.
But if I can accomplish these bigger things, because that's bigger than me, that leads to better music down the line that I can listen to and be a fan of, you know? So, and you never know who you're affecting and who's looking at you and saying, like, oh, I can do that. So that's my number. I would say that's just the thing I think about all the time nowadays with my music and where I'm going.
Yeah, so I guess along the lines of just, like, being someone to look up to, and kind of being that, I don't want to say idol, because that's, like,
right.
But, you know, just being that figure that people can look at and be like, that could be me, you know?
Right. Absolutely. And that's the thing, is it's not about me and how great I am. Mm-hmm. It's about, and I don't ever want that to be like, I want to be a role model, not because I'm so great, but because I proved that something was possible. Mm-hmm. I want to be the proof. I want to be the, if she can do it, I can do it. Because if I try to put myself on some pedestal, then suddenly everything I'm doing is still unattainable. I'm not on a pedestal. I'm a 32-year-old mom who's making music, you know, during a pandemic. And so if I can do it, with all of that said, then yeah, you can work hard and you can do it. And there's a luck factor. And yeah, it's about being that proof for somebody, that proof of concept.
Let me show you how good it can be with just a house in the country. The world is gonna be, it'll be, it's got nothing.
Sure, you know, being a musician and being a mom comes with its own set of challenges that I feel like haven't really been explored.
Yeah, there is. It's everything that has to do with the music. I mean, like, I love to travel with my bands. I love to I love to get out there. I love to meet people. I love to play shows. I love to party. And there is a fine line, and I don't let anything define me, because no one thing can. So I decided, you know, when I got pregnant, you know, it was kind of like, I'm not going to lose myself in this, because I don't want her doing that either. I want her to live her life and to understand that if something happens, that she doesn't have to give anything else up either. So I'm not leaving anything on the table, because I don't want her to. So it's become that sort of like, there are specific demands, but I'm going to make them work, and I'm not going to lose anything if I can possibly help it.
Yes, yeah. I've definitely heard this piece of advice where it's like, you know, be the woman that you needed when you were younger.
There you go. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. That is it in a nutshell. Because if I would have had me when I was 8, I mean, I probably would have started singing earlier. I probably would have started a garage band like I wanted to. I probably would have, you know, started playing shows or something and been in this space earlier. But I didn't, because I didn't know it was possible. No one had done it. You know, I didn't see it. So, I mean, well, you grow up and then you find out that there's been black women in rock and roll for, you know.
But it wasn't super big locally.
Right, exactly. Like, there was no one on the road. There was no one on the posters or the, you know, the music videos and the hours of Much Music and then Fuse that I would like, MTV2, Subterranean, like all those all those TV shows that used to actually show music videos. I didn't see anyone that looked like me ever. And then, you know, so it's to get to be that is dope.
Yeah, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And why not Zoidberg, you know? Why not me?
Well, I feel like we've really dug into it.
Yeah, I'm open book. Listen.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I've loved the learning so much about this very, really interesting perspective, especially just being just so ingrained in the Tulsa music scene. I mean, I'm an audience member. I love watching these shows, catching these bands, and just absorbing it all.
Yeah, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like being at a show. There's nothing like playing a show. Live music is such a special magic.
Yeah. Do you guys have any shows coming up?
So, yes.
Yes.
Cliff Diver is playing Kane's Ballroom. We're opening for Kay Flay for the 104.5 Summer Bash. And last I heard, there were like 1,500 tickets sold. And it's my first show with Cliff Diver. So It'll be the first time I'll actually get to play live. And we've incorporated me into a lot of the songs that they've already put out that people know and love. So I'm really excited to kind of show people, okay, so this is the old stuff with me. Get ready for the new stuff and to, like, kill it. So that's August 1st. I can't wait.
Yeah, yeah. And with Kay Flay, that's a big deal.
I know, right?
Yeah, I hear she's super nice.
I can't. I'll let you know. I'll report afterwards. But I've heard she's nice, too.
I saw her when she came to Kane's last time. I think it was 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got her set list.
Oh, dope. I know. Bring it back. Have her sign it.
Yes, that's the ultimate fan move.
There you go.
Really.
I'm a fan backstage. I'll have her sign it. I don't care. I'm like, everyone's got time for a selfie. Come on.
Come on. Life's
Come
short.
Come on. Give me a selfie.
So I guess talking about artists and stuff, what are some, like, what's maybe your dream person to do a show with?
Okay, so I have to divide it up because, like, with Nightingale, I would love to play with, like, Yola. I am obsessed with her, and I would love to play with her. And, like, and John Batiste right now, I'm obsessed. So, like, either of those two, I think that we'd be really great together, and it would be amazing. Oh, Keb Mo. That would be incredible. So those are probably my, like, three for Nightingale. I'm sorry I couldn't decide on one. For Cliff Diver, oh, dang. That's a deep well. I would say, I think, this is so dumb. Okay, and here's why I say this. Like, I would want to play the most hype show with the most people there. And so I would say with Cliff Diver, like, and the guys would probably say this too, and I know this is so, like, canned response, but it's true. If we could open for Blink 182, like, I think that would be the sickest thing. And I know it's like saying the Beatles or whatever, and it's so predictable, but, you know, they're who they are for a reason, and they gave us a lot to go on. And so, like, I think that would be, like, my dream show. That would be, like, Warped Tour in a can for me. Like, that would be it.
I think that's my dream show, too.
We'll make it happen. We'll do what we can.
We're getting manifesting.
Back together.
We are manifesting.
I'm putting it in my manifesting journal.
Yes, we're writing it down. We're putting it out in the universe.
Yes.
And I'm sure everybody who's listening is also thinking about it.
Yeah, everyone manifest it. Everyone work on that. If you show me a dated page in your manifest journal, you get in free when it happens.
Ooh.
How about that?
Oh, man.
Backstage passes.
Yeah, I just know, like, 30 people just Googled manifest journal.
Should be doing it anyway.
Yeah, you can't get what you want if you don't. There you ask know. For it.
Exactly. At least think about it. Set a goal. What is it? You're like 60% more likely to do something if you write it down or whatever. So even just that, just like setting your mindset, being intentional, you know, you never know what can happen.
You never know what can happen.
I'm not disregarded as an ID. But what if we turn our sights back to all of the dreams? Hope to come true and love one another like brothers and sisters do.
So I wanted to ask, is there anything coming up music-wise that people should be on the lookout for? Any new music coming?
Yeah, so with Nightingale, we just recorded four songs, four new ones, and we have another one that we wrote and was so good with the other ones that we have to get back into the studio to record that. So hopefully a little bit later this year, we'll be releasing some new music. And then Cliff Diver, of course, we just got back from Indiana, recorded our first full-length LP. And so that'll be coming out hopefully this fall. It's like done, and it's the hardest thing in the world to not just send it to everybody because I'm so proud of it. But it's going to be massive, and that'll be, hopefully in a couple of months, hopefully in a few months if everything goes according to plan.
Yes, yes. Everybody's going to have their eyes and ears peeled.
I know it is anticipated by, especially by the Cliff Diver fans, to see what I brought to the table, and I think they're going to be happy.
Yeah, is there a little bit of pressure there, or are you just kind of easy breezy?
Huge. Oh, my God. I accepted their offer to be in the band, and I went home and had four consecutive panic attacks. Like, what? Oh, my God. These kids are going to destroy me on Twitter. Like, no one's gonna get it. I wonder if anyone's gonna have any little comments. Like, and there's been people who have said things. I mean, the worst anyone has said is like, well, you know, I've been skeptical about what that's gonna sound like, or, you know, if that's the worst I hear, then that's be skeptical, because it's coming.
Yeah.
And it's good.
Yeah, you're proving the critics wrong.
I think so. I think so. We'll see. We'll see how skeptical they are when they get to track three.
When they get to track three?
Yeah, you get a few in, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's the one where it's like, if it's got you, it's got you. So that's where you have, like, the moment you decide.
You'll set your hooks in the people.
I think so.
I think so, too.
I'm going to manifest it.
All right. Well, thank you, Brianna.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been such a great time.
Yeah, me too. And again, like, just getting asked to do this, like, I was a kid listening to RSU Radio. Like, wow. You know what I mean? I mean it. Like, everything is such a big deal to me. And this is super cool. And I'm also just in general trying to get better at talking, you know? And so I hope I did right by you.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Anytime.